You are listening to the Middle East Institute's podcast series. To support MEI's programs and podcasts, please donate at www.mei.edu. Thank you for your support.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Paul Salem. I'm Vice President for Policy and Research at the Middle East Institute. Welcome to today's presentation and discussion with our colleague from Shanghai, Dr. Pan Guang, who I had the pleasure of visiting there a few years ago, and I'm very happy to welcome him here in D.C. China obviously playing an increasingly large role in the world and, of course, also in the Middle East. A lot of deep economic and energy interests, an increasing political and diplomatic role, security concerns over violence and terrorism, and partnerships on the Iran nuclear deal, part of the P5 plus one, cooperation over Afghanistan, cooperation over Syria, a very interesting and evolving Chinese role in the Middle East. And we're very lucky to have Dr. Pan Guang with us today to explain his analysis of Chinese interests and Chinese policy, and then engage in a discussion with you. This session will be also videotaped and placed on our website for people who weren't able to be with us today. Let me, by way of a short introduction to Dr. Guan, he is the vice chairman and a professor at the Shanghai Center for International Studies. He's the vice president for the Chinese Association of Middle East Studies. He is an international council member of the Asia Society, and I understand he's going up to New York in a couple of days give a talk there. He's also a senior advisor to the Shanghai municipality and to the Chinese Ministry of Public Security, an advisor on anti-terror affairs. And he was appointed by UN Secretary Kofi Annan as a member of the high-level group for the UN Alliance of Civilizations. He's lectured and researched in many universities around the world, from Columbia to Boston University, Stanford University, Hebrew University in Jerusalem, the Emirates Center in Abu Dhabi, and really is engaged in many, many issues. He's written extensively on China's Middle East policy, on its anti-terror strategy, on its energy perspectives, as well as on Islam in China, Judaism in China, and other fascinating issues. Dr. Guang will give a presentation of 25, 30 minutes, and then he's been kind enough to engage in a discussion for the remainder of our time. So, Dr. Guang, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Paul. And very happy to be here, and honored to be here and talk about China's rule, or people call the rising rule in the changing Middle East. First on the period since 2011. I never said Arab Spring. I said a dramatic change in Middle East since 2011. And China's rule also changing, basically rising, but also some of the negative influence. So I talk politically, economically, and security. Then also I focus on several hot points of China's policy. The map here, but I found the laser cannot. A laser could be here, but cannot there. But I can show you some is important things. Firstly, politically, basically the dramatic change in Middle East don't have the serious negative influence on the political relations between China and the Middle East country. Most countries, we call the old friend, still keep very good relations with China, like GCC, six GCC countries, Jordan, Morocco, the king just visited China last week, Algeria, Saudi, Qatar, the six GCC countries, and also three non-Arabic countries, Iran, Turkey, Israel. And I will mention the visit, top leader visit, Xi Jinping visit the Middle East, also all the Middle East leaders visit China. And with the regime change country, these are two kinds. One is after regime change, recovery. We have very good relations with Egypt, with Tunisia. President Sisi visited China two times in the past 2 years. And our prime minister, our foreign minister Wang Yi just paid a very successful visit to Tunisia. So the relations with this country, we are basically is good. We think this country is like Egypt. You can say this is cool, but you can also say this military revolution. In 1953, revolution overthrew the monarchy. But it was also cool, if you said cool, yes? The control of this country makes this country stable. We think this is good things. We're very happy to see this. Tunisia also same problem, but basically stable. Another kind of is still trouble in the civil war. Yemen, Libya, and Syria. We bring our embassy back, but we still have several people still there in the dangerous situation. And we have to bring 36,000 Chinese labor from Libya. I was very surprised to see so many Chinese, 36,000. We may have more in Algeria or in Egypt. Then last year we bring back 500 from Yemen who have to leave. In Libya, Chinese project all stop. Now we are happy to see new government finally recognized by United Nations. And in Syria, we don't have a lot of investment, only have several hundred students all come back. But in Iraq, we have a huge investment. So we have to bring several hundred people from northern Iraq. So with these countries still in the civil war, we basically, our principle is recognize legitimate government. Recognized by the United Nations. So we still keep the relations with them. But we also have connection with opposition like Syria, like Houthi in Yemen. And Libya is very difficult. You don't know how many groups. So now we're very happy to see the new government finally recognized by United Nations. And you should, I should mention the first China policy documents towards Arab country, officially published as long documents. But it's the first China's policy towards Arab country, not the Middle East, mainly Arab country. And if you have time, you can read from the website, our Minister of Foreign Affairs, long document, also English, also Arabic. Then I talk something about economic. Economic is China's influence really rising. Trade, investment, and energy, oil and gas. And FTA, currency exchange. Some Arab countries use RMB, Chinese yuan. And the bigger center is Dubai, and you can see Dubai there. I don't have to. Every day, 100 container from China to Dubai. Dubai became a center for China Middle East trade. From Dubai, all the Chinese products transshipped to Middle East country. Of course, now not go to Syria, even not go to northern Iraq. But in all the Middle East country, even in Israel, in Iran, you can find many things made in China everywhere, like these. Yeah. But the negative influence is, since 2011, the expenses for the container increased, and for insurance increased. So the business people now in a small city called Yiwu near Shanghai, 30,000 Middle East businessmen there. So my friends do research on Middle East to come to Shanghai. I always suggest them go to Yiwu, only 3 hours drive. You can see the Yiwu everywhere as Middle East businessmen. I was told the largest Iraq community out of Iraq in Yiwu. I don't know whether this is true. And the bigger Moscow, 5,000 Muslims can inside at the same time. Yeah. They buy everything small, not really high tech or military, small goods and sent to the Middle East. Now, of course, basically to GCC country, to the Istanbul country, not to civil war country, and also I mentioned Dubai. I was there just last month. 20 years ago in Dubai, no Chinese, no any Chinese. Now, three hundred thousand Chinese there. Not 30,000, 300,000 Chinese. The bigger trade center called Dragon City in Dubai. Now in Bahrain, they also build another Dragon City. They want to compete with Dubai. Because many people in the Dragon City in Dubai, I found a family driver from Oman. They buy a lot of things, then come back. So really, they became a center for the China Middle East trade. And now, also, I should mention the FTA. The China GCC negotiation on FTA is going very well. When President Xi Jinping visited Saudi, met the leader of GCC, and decided to promote this process. If the FTA between China and GCC could be signed, this will be big promotion and to the both sides. Because the energy. Now the Saudi is the China's imported oil. Saudi is number one. Last year we imported 54 million of ton of oil from Saudi. And Qatar became the number one for LNG, the natural gas by ship, not by pipeline. And all other countries, even the Iraq, last year we imported 15 million ton of oil from Iraq. So I was always joking. I said that in 2003, we are very strong apostle George W. Bush war in Iraq. He said, this is a mistake. And we said, no war for oil. One thing we are right, this is a mistake. Another thing, maybe we are wrong, the oil, all oil not come here, it's go to China. Yeah. So this is very interesting. So Middle East for China now is energy security, number one. Of course, the transportation very important. Yeah, transportation very important, and so I think originally all the oil goes through Malacca. Now maybe in the future can go to the Gwadar, Pakistan. From Gwadar, build a pipeline, go to Xinjiang, Kashgar. From Kashgar to Gwadar is called the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. This is important project for China's Belt and Road projects. Also very important for Afghanistan, I will mention later. So all this is economic things. Of course, I have some negative influence, but everywhere you can still see the made in China and construction by Chinese and everywhere in the Middle East. Also, for the energy trade, when the President Xi Jinping visited Saudi, we decided to not only buy oil, we should have joint venture to produce. So China now sets a refinery factory in the Yanbu, Saudi. Saudi also invest in Tianjin and in some other city in China to build the refinery factory. So now not only sell and buy, we joint venture for some of the second and the third level. Of course, about economic, I must mention the President Xi Jinping's initiative for the One Belt, One Road. All this goes through Middle East. In the ancient time, yes, from the China, West China, goes through Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, even Israel, go to Mediterranean Sea, to Egypt, to Greece. So now we want to build a new Silk Road. The new Silk Road not by horse, a camel. It's by high-speed railway, ocean-going ship, by flight, and by internet. So not only for this country, for the global. And then I should mention China just established Silk Road Foundation, $40 billion U.S. dollars. Then we finally established AIIB, Asian the bank for the infrastructure built. All the Arab country is a member and a founding member. Founding member, also Iran, Israel, and Turkey, the founding member. So I think, also I should mention Israel. Now China, Israel have some new projects. And one is a bigger Shanghai company called Guangming Company bought the Tanua, largest Israeli food company. So invest in Israel. Secondly, we will build a high-speed railway from Eilat to Haifa. So we'll connect Red Sea with Mediterranean Sea. Third, Chinese company, especially from Shanghai, got the manager rights for the Haifa port for 20 years. So this port will connect to Greece and to some other European port. And to North Africa. And when we visit, when President Xi visited Egypt, Egyptian said, if you build the Red Sea, Mediterranean Sea high-speed railway, maybe compete with the Suez Canal. Yes, compete. But the Suez Canal, you know, now very, very, the many ship, the ship have to stay in the waiting list. Sometimes have to wait for 1 month. So now we help promote the Suez Canal. But the project from Red Sea to Mediterranean Sea is another way, by railway. This is also could be helpful. And one new development is the Iranian nuclear agreement. China is very active to join this. Finally, we are very happy to see this sign. So then I think in the next several years, we will buy more and more oil from Iran. Because the United Nations sanctioned, so we cannot waste. We have to reduce. But now we can maybe increase. Also investment. I know the Shanghai company built the subway in Tehran, capital of Iran. They have to stop because United Nations. But now they come back. They can do again. Finally, security area. Security area, you know, follow your economic political interests increase. You must play more important role in security area. Since 2002, China began to appoint a special envoy for Middle East affairs. Now the new envoy is Ambassador Gong Xiaosheng. He was the ambassador to Turkey. I know him very well, can speak fluent Arabic, and can speak little Turkey. Yeah. And he visits many Middle East countries, try to promote negotiation even between Israel and Palestinian. And very significant is the first time in the People's Republic of China, we appointed the special representative for Syria, the Ambassador Xie Xiaoyan, just 3 months ago. Yeah. He now come to join all the conference, international conference in Vienna, in Geneva, I don't remember, in France, about Syria. So for Middle East, a special envoy. For the one country called special representative. Then we also have special representative for Afghanistan, and a special representative for Sudan, Darfur, and South Sudan, so on. So I think this is very active, very positive development. You have a special representative. Pay more attention to this country, to this area. Can do more. Then international efforts, of course, we join the 6+1 on Iranian nuclear issue, on Syria, ceasefire, on the bring the chemical weapons from Syria. We send the two warships with Russian warships, bring all the, so far we said all. I don't know whether still there are some chemical weapons. And then Libya. We joined the Libya International Conference. Our foreign minister there. So this is international arena, the diplomatic. Also, we have soldiers in southern Lebanon. Not Chinese army, it's UN peacekeeping forces. Since 2006, the Lebanon war, and we sent 1,000 soldiers in southern Lebanon between Israeli army and Hezbollah. It's a very, very dangerous situation. Already one officer was killed by Israeli, so accident, they said. And originally, we have the red line. We don't send soldiers for fighting, only send soldiers for medical and construction, like southern Lebanon. They do a lot of work for the mine swept. The local people very happy for this, because the mine kill a lot of people. We also do this in Afghanistan now, with U.S. joint training for the Afghanistan people for mine swept. But 5 years ago, we closed the red line. We sent three warships to join the anti-piracy to Somalia. This is really fighting. So close the red line. Now we send the fighting unit to South Sudan, to Mali. And the three warships always in the the India Ocean to join these. Since the three worshippers are always there, so they need food, they need water. So finally, we decided to establish a first supply base in Djibouti. This is really very important. Very important. And there is already a U.S. base, French base, and even Japanese base. So this is China's first base. So far called a supply base. The people call it a military base. Anyway, now it's mainly for the food, water, and something like that. Yeah. Of course, anti-terrorism, anti-ISIS, U.S. Always hope, and Russia hope China can join. We said we will not join the bombing. Basically, personally, I don't think bombing is the way. Final solution should be a comprehensive economic, culture, education. Then you can destroy roots of terrorism and extremism. Bombing kill more people, sometimes is necessary, but it's not kill all solution. So, but China will give support. Of course, we give a lot of support to refugee, to Iraq people. And now three, the bigger oil fields now do by Chinese. And one is Lumela. Second is Hafaya. Third ones are Al-Hadeb. The three ones is basically is China is have dominate shale, but joint venture with BP, with Total, with French, with British. Fortunately, all in the southern Iraq. So far, no problem. Also, we have a lot of investment in Kurdish area. We already set the consulate in Erbil for the Kurdish area. Because we need the issue visa, we should protect the Chinese investment there. No matter there whether they become some state, but at least now we need some consul people there. And also Chinese businessmen only go to Kurdish area because the area is safe. Or southern area. So this is security, and basically China want to improve the dialogue of different civilization, and we support the United Nations play a dominant role, have a comprehensive solution, not only bombing, but of course, firstly we need a ceasefire for Syria also. Finally, a few words about Afghanistan. Because it's so close connected to the Middle East. Last year, China-US have called a Czech 1.5 dialogue on Afghanistan. The both sides have retired diplomats, retired general and scholars. And the participants can say whatever they want, not open to the media. And then reach a lot of important mutual understanding. So finally, we establish a four-party mechanism: China, U.S., Afghanistan, and Pakistan. We bring the Taliban to the table because they have the office in Doha. Originally, they said Taliban Emirate or something like that. President Obama said, stop this. We don't recognize their emirate. So finally, Qatar forced them to change the name called the Taliban office in Qatar, in Doha. This is okay. So now it's easy. The Taliban office in Doha can easily, Chinese ambassador, U.S. ambassador can easily talk to them. With the special envoy, special representative for Afghanistan's Ambassador Sun Yixi. Now it's Ambassador Deng Xicheng. Sun Yixi just retired. Mr. Turn, when he was a young officer in 1980, he worked with U.S. in Pakistan in 1980, worked together against Soviet occupation. So they know each other very well, very well, and very successful to to give a lot of weapons. Unfortunately, though, some weapons still used by Taliban, made in China, made in U.S. And finally, for Soviet Union, leave Afghanistan. And they were very happy we worked together again. Then you know the leader of Taliban was killed. Then the new leader, I heard, I don't know exactly, the new leader Mansour opposed the negotiation. Again, the U.S. killed him. So now the new leader come. I hope this leader will not oppose the negotiation. So both China and U.S. Reached the common understanding. Any future solution, any future process of reconciliation and the peace process should include Taliban. Otherwise, no peace. The Taliban not only a military group. The huge poor people support them. So if you cannot include Taliban and the people support Taliban, no peace. But of course, we understand that it's very difficult situation, long way to go. So anyway, Taliban now began to talk to us. Now we work together, continue. And also many the training process by U.S., China, Afghanistan, Pakistan together. The first is training course for Mineswept. Then we have some training course for Afghanistan police. Afghanistan police is 9% cannot read and write. I don't know how to say English. So the corruption. So really needed the training. So U.S., China, and United. Also, Jack, you must have training course. Let Afghanistan people know how to do something, not the drug, some the agriculture things. So all this is going well, and we are very happy to see the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, officially said China, U.S. will support China's Silk Road economic build. Officially, in their called a new policy towards Central Asia, only support the belt, not road. Road because East China Sea, South China war more complicated. But anyway, this is very good. They said the U.S. the strategy for New Silk Road could work together with China's Silk Road economic belt. And so we now discuss in detail how to work together. Work together, yeah. So I think it's better for me to stop here. So keep more time for question. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. That was a very wide-ranging presentation. Let me ask a couple of questions first before turning it over to the audience. As you described, I mean, it's striking the speed with which China has become more involved, as you said, in Dubai, from zero people to 300,000. Now there's a little supply base in the region, diplomatically much more engaged. And this is only over a few years.
Yeah.
China obviously is well known for five-year plans, 10-year plans, you know, looking much forward in the future. You've indicated in terms of sort of one belt, one road policy, kind of a vision, but does China have a more long-term strategic vision or political vision about its presence in the region in terms of perhaps a military a presence in cooperation with other countries or even a bigger political presence? Is there long-term thinking about that?
Mm-hmm. I think in the near future, maybe in the next decade, not really military, yeah, but economic, yeah. China really want to promote the One Belt, One Road, and the Middle East will keep a key role in this strategy. And political, we now are very happy, always say, we keep normal and good relations with all the Middle East country, from Iran to Israel, both sides. But sometimes also have some problem, and when Iranian leader visit China, still say we will destroy Israel. And it's not necessary to establish state Israel. And Israeli always complain why China so active for the nuclear issue. And many years ago, we sell weapons to Iran. Now I don't think we really sell weapons to Iran. All this, if you keep good relations with all Middle East countries, sometimes their conflicts will influence you. But basically, I think all the countries regard China as a friend. Friends, we now have the several level bilateral relations. First level called the overall strategic partnership with Egypt, with UAE, several countries, Algeria, from revolution's time. And second is not overall, strategic partnership. Third is friendly partnership, three level. With all the Middle East country, three level. So I think it's friendly, good relations.
My second and last question, we are here obviously in Washington. You've touched on areas where China and the U.S. have cooperated, maybe mm-hmm. issues where they have some disagreements, whether it's the politics in Egypt, or you mentioned in Iraq, the U.S. invaded and China got the oil. If you stepped back, how would you describe elements of congruence and elements of difference that China and the U.S. have vis-a-vis the Middle East?
Yeah, basically now in U.S., especially after the energy revolution, some people, even some very close friend of mine, said now U.S. really don't need this oil from Middle East. But China now buy more and more oil. So China should do more. Now U.S. do so much, and China should do more. But also some of the scholars said they worry about China will repress U.S. So it's very interesting, sometimes contradictory. But for China, basically think we should work together with U.S. and with Russia, with Arab country, even with Israel. And for example, now the anti-ISIS, the three groups, we always persuade you should work together. U.S.-led alliance, Russian, Iran, Bashar Assad and Hezbollah, and also Saudi. Saudi announced the 36 country, but many countries like Malaysia, Indonesia, and they said we never sign an official agreement. We only talk about this. So we're surprised that Saudi announced now they have new alliance. But anyway, we hope the three alliance can work together. Otherwise, it's very difficult. And very dangerous, like Turkish killed the Russian pilot, some accident. But now I think some cooperation between Russian and United States. Okay. So China want to promote this, cooperation.
Thank you. Let's take questions from the audience. Is there a microphone?
Bill Jones from Executive Intelligence Review. Guang, I'd like to ask you a question on the reaction in the Middle East. I think the Silk Road economic belt, after President Xi's visit, created a tremendous amount of optimism in the region. You have, for instance, the new Suez Canal. President al-Sisi is calling it a part of the Silk Road development. You have in Yemen a lot of enthusiasm among ministers there who now I understand, are going to send a delegation to Beijing to ask to be a part of the Silk Road development. We have talked about that a long time here in Washington. The idea of a Marshall Plan for the Middle East has popped up every now and then. Now I think we have a plan which goes far beyond the Marshall Plan and is less exclusive than the Marshall Plan with the Belt and Road Project. And given the statements by Secretary Blinken, wouldn't it be an opportunity to begin to discuss with the U.S. specifically on the Middle East on how to cooperate in the same way that we're doing now in Afghanistan, where the U.S. could bring to bear, you know, what it has in the region, and China could help with the type of economic development project that it's intending on doing?
Yes, we are very happy to see the Secretary Blinken said that. So we now discuss in detail with U.S. sides how to cooperate. In fact, originally, my friend Fred Starr from Johns Hopkins University, he initiated this new Silk Road project. Then by Secretary Killerly, they put the stronger political color, look like exclude China. But after Hillary left, U.S. official government didn't mention this. Now, Secretary Blinken said, U.S. New Silk Road Project can work together with China's Silk Road Economic Belt. But what we can do, so far not clear. Both sides, I think, will be in D.C., the U.S.-China strategic talk, strategic economic talk will, including this as a topic. Same things with Russia. Originally, Russia not support the Belt and the Road. And they have, Mr. Putin have Eurasia Economic League. So then finally we reached the compromise. We said Eurasia Economic League could work together with the Silk Road Economic Belt. But how? No, still no idea which project. Russians always want to north to south, from Russia to India Ocean, from the Russian Empire. It was their dream. But now impossible. They cannot go through Afghanistan. And China more active from east to west. This is traditional Silk Road. This is possible. All the countries support. But the problem is we need a more specific project. Railway, highway, bridge, something like that. This is, should be discussed in detail. I think still in the process, under the discussion.
Thank you. And the lady in the fourth row.
Hi, my name is Selena Chen. I'm working at Thomson Reuters. Thank you very much for your great speech, Dr. Pan. My question is about Chinese fighters fighting inside Syria now. Most of them are Uyghurs. So I'm wondering, like, what's their agenda now in Syria and also of the future? And also, I'm kind of curious about how likely you think they will return to China and conduct attacks in the mainland. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You mean the Uyghur, the jihadist? Yes. Don't know the exact numbers. Some people say that several hundreds. Some people say that several thousand. But at least now 2,000. Yeah. I got some the number from my Turkish friend. I think they know very well. Yeah. In northern Syria, now the two area, one is occupied by ISIS. Most jihadists Arabic speaking. But Turkish area, they said for refugee, and Bashar Assad said they are occupied by Turkey. This area, the jihadist, most is Turkish speaking, not Arabic speaking, from the Chechnya, from the Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and from Afghanistan, from Xinjiang, China, from Balkan country, Bosnia, Herzegovina, and Albania, and Kosovo are some. Most is, according to Turkey, is descendants of Ottoman Empire, we said. So this area, including some of the Turkish-speaking Chinese, they are very dangerous. We worry about that. If they fight there, no problem. But if they come back, this is the same situation like United States, like France, like Australia. We all have some people fighting in Syria, in Iraq. We hope they don't come back. But they come back, you cannot stop them. Yeah. And Tajikistan government set a called return hotline. Any Tajik people, if he don't want to still continue the fighting, want to come back Tajik, just call this hot number. And the government will tell you how to come back. Will help him. So I heard the 1 month they received many calls. Some people said, I'm wounded. I don't want to continue to fighting. I come want to back to Dushanbe or something like that. So all the Central Asia country, China, Afghanistan, even Pakistan, we all facing this same problem. We support the Middle East country to anti-terrorism, anti-extremism, but at the same time, we should do a lot of things to prepare, if they come back, more terrorist attack. Basically, in our situation, Xinjiang is okay, it's stable. The small terrorist attack, but like in Chechnya, in Russian, in some area, it's more stable. But anyway, still some people want to do something.
Thank you.
I am Hussein Saifzadeh, a former professor at Tehran University. Now I'm teaching at Montgomery College. I'm teaching at Montgomery College here. What you said, I see as you said, China has started to go from Africa to Latin America, then to Middle East and so, and going, okay, in theory, we believe that you start with low politics and you go to the high politics. But as a professor in Iran, I had this problem, and now I have the same thing. When you go toward the government, as Americans started authoritarianism, to support authoritarianism about 40 years ago, 50 years ago, now it failed. They go to the people about liberalization, but they don't understand the difference between liberalization and democratization. But China, Russia, at least in Iran, I have gone to 55 countries around there, and they compare. And see, most of them, the intellectuals, are critical, so critical of China. Mm-hmm. So China is not a model for them. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Iran, we were talking, I have been close to Rouhani and all of them over there, but but I was critical. They did not trust, even Rouhani did not trust, that the North Road to them had not been built. No technology was transferred. Nothing. The democracy is blocked. The government is supported. Do you think that now that in the Middle East it is awakening, I know, is it any hope that China would really help to establish the kind of stability there?
Thank you.
China, of course, would like to help. But basically, still, depended on the local people. I visited Iran. Because I visited Iran, when I come to the United States, the people look the passport. Why you go to Iran? I said, I joined the conference. Which kind of conference? Anti-terrorism. Iran? Anti-terrorism? So, very interesting. Finally, they thought, okay. I visited Iran. There is almost 80 million people there, but 70% were born after 1979, Islamic Revolution. I met some young people on the street at home. They watch the Hollywood movie. It is illegal in Iran now. And they like the Western music. They really want to reform. And I think President Rouhani really give people hope. Yeah. And after the agreement signed, Iran can open the door to the world. And for most Arab countries, especially these countries still civil war, I also feel very sad because young generation really want to reform, but finally people kill each other. So my friend, he now do good cellular phone business in North Korea. Najib Saviris, he is Egyptian businessman, very wealthy, is Coptic. He has a very interesting North Korea, 2007, I visited there. All the people, the cellular phone have to put. You cannot bring cellular phone. The country like 30 years ago, China. 30 years ago, the China like this. And now, Najib Saviris told me, I said, oh, congratulations, you're very successful cellular phone, mobile phone business in North Korea. 1 million. They said, no, 5 million now. His opinion is, cellular phone is democracy. It's very interesting, the opinion. So he now do, is when the North Korea want to open the cellular phone, the leader said, we cannot invite America. We cannot invite Chinese. We cannot invite Russians. They will control us. So we should invite some country. Oh, okay. Egyptian. So Egyptian company do 5 million cellular phone. Now in the North Korea, all the people have cellular phone. And so, how to say, I cannot answer your question, but anyway, to promote the economic culture, education, and promote the dialogue of civilization. I joined the UNAOC. It's mainly called the United Nations Alliance of Civilization. We just have new global, every year they have global conference. The last month I was in Baku, Azerbaijan, during the conference. Different religions, ethnic people get together. This is the future for the world.
Last couple of questions, a gentleman in the second row.
Thank you, Dr. Pan. I'm Ali Dodd Mafinezam with the West Asia Council. My question following up on the one before me on Iran has to do with the fact that Iran is the only Middle Eastern country that has observer status in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Yes. How do you see the future of that membership, and do you think it's beneficial or not for the country to become a full member of SCO and what the implications of that are? Thank you.
Yes. And 2005, and Shanghai Cooperation Organization officially accept Iran, India, Pakistan, three observers. And now we will, I think this summit, next month, will be in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. We'll discuss India and Pakistan become new member. Iran, because under the United Nations sanction, so according to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, any country under the UN sanction cannot be member. But now, it's okay. So, I think in the next several years, Iran could be a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Another is Turkey. So SCO now into Middle East because Iran is observer, Turkey is partner, and so the Turkey also they always said, European close door to us. So we will towards East, China, India, Japan, Korea. We always cannot go to Europe. Europeans still regard us as, in their mind, Iran, the Turkey is different. So they are very active to promote relations with China. So they are very active also joining the Silk Road, the project.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Chang. I've written some articles for the MAP project here at the Middle East Institute. And Dr. Pan, you had portrayed China's having pretty good relationship with all the countries in the region. But I was just in Doha a few days ago, and there were a lot of Arab scholars and politicians who were critiquing China's role regarding Syria. They were really disappointed in China's four vetoes of the UN Security Council resolutions, and they thought that China was being kind of too rigid regarding its non-interference principle, and that China, that some sort of intervention could be a positive thing for the Syrian conflict. So I was just wondering, how would you evaluate China's contributions or to reducing the conflict in Syria, and whether or not Arab leaders are kind of pressuring China to put some pressure on Assad?
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is 3 or 4 years ago, China-Russia's 3 veto on the, basically, China quite different from Russia. Russia has really interest there. 20,000 Russian people there, and only one Navy base out of the former Soviet Union area, Tartus there, also many the students there. China really don't have the so huge interest there. China, why veto? One reason is we have good relations with Russia, and Russia really don't want to veto around. They want to send people together. But another thing is China always opposes military intervention, not only in Syria, also in Libya. We very strongly oppose this. But finally, they kill Gaddafi. Then make Libya, you know, today is Libya. Also, we even oppose 2003 war in Iraq. So this is, I think, only a principle opposed the foreign military intervention, including bombing. So if at that time foreign power bomb Syria, situation may be not so like today. So people still can say, oh, this is wrong or this is right, can discuss this. But anyway, now the foreign intervention already, not by greater power, not by US, France, Britain, or China, Russia, by foreign jihadists. So this situation is now like this. And for Qatar, I know Qatar very well because I remember UNLC. The Qatar Emir's mother is one of founder member like me, is Sheikh Moza. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in Qatar, the people are quite, among the people, different opinion. And the same in United States. Some people accuse Qatar is main support to ISIS. But some people say that Qatar play very important role to support the U.S. because U.S. military base there. So I understand this different opinion. But anyway, now, no great power intervention, military intervention, but the foreign jihadist intervention already there. So our main purpose is to how to reach ceasefire and stop the civil war. Then can find a peaceful solution. We really worry about this. We don't want the conflict between Sunni and the Shia. You know, the Russians' alliance, Iran, Bashar Assad and Hezbollah, all the Shia. So people look like the Sunni and the Shia fight with each other. This is not good. We want to promote the dialogue of civilization, and even one civilization among the Islam. Also, two groups fight each other. For Chinese, cannot understand. In Baku, I speak for the education of Islam. I said that in China, we make investigation. We ask them, can you say some of the representative of Islam? That most young people said, oh, Osama bin Laden. It's crazy. Then when I ask the young students, what do you think of jihad? Oh, jihad is terrorist attack. They never read the Quran. They think jihad is suicide bomb. So this is terrible. So I suggest Chinese young people should know real Islam. not Islam from Western media, but also United States, like Doha people, should know more about China. Mutual understanding. Now it's a lot of the misunderstanding, a lot of misunderstanding. So I hope we can work together for this.
Thank you, Dr. Guang. This is obviously a fascinating and massive topic, and we could go on forever, but thank you for spending this hour with us today. Please join me in thanking Professor Guang.